And we're back for our final moments together. Thank you so much for joining me here in the studio. This is Jim Santel, Morning Cannolis. Connor is also with me, my producer here in the studios right on Wisconsin Avenue in downtown Waukesha. This is WAUK 540 AM 101 FM. We're also taking your calls in the last few moments together here, 844-967-2789. Appreciate those who have called in. All perspectives, all views, questions, comments. That's what America is supposed to be about, right? And so let's continue with that tradition, not just this morning, but in all the times ahead, including this morning program. We'll be back again next Saturday as well. Before we finish up today, let's chat a little bit more about this Supreme Court case coming up. Dobbs is the name of the case. It is the one that likely will result in the overturning of Roe versus Wade, or at least the significant rolling back of its implications, presumably sending things back to the states. Right before the break, I was chatting about a couple of those states that already have done so. There are an awful lot of what are called trigger laws out there, too. And those cases, likewise, those states, likewise, presumably will be returning to sometimes old cases, old legislative enactments, other things. We know in Kentucky, for example, Governor Andy Beshear vetoed a 15-week abortion ban, but that was overturned by the state legislature. I also mentioned, of course, Florida. Governor Ron DeSantis there approved a similar bill to Oklahoma, other places, talking about viability. A non-viability bill, no exceptions for rape, incest, or human trafficking. So legislatures already anticipating Roe versus Wade, doing things that frankly are inconsistent right now with the law, but may well be consistent with the law as we go forward. What's going to happen down the road here? Well, again, predictions are always difficult things to do. We don't know for certainty what the Supreme Court may decide. They could surprise us, but highly unlikely. We know that there already are congressional proposals to codify Roe and Casey introduced in the House of Representatives and the United States Senate. We know about the dynamics there. So you can, in fact, codify some of those Supreme Court cases through legislation. Those would also be subject to judicial review down the road. We know that there are some state legislatures who are also trying to limit the travel of residents to other states for the purposes of obtaining reproductive services. Question whether or not that kind of legislation will be held constitutional. There is from the late part of the 19th century, a few cases establishing, yes, a constitutional right to travel, even though the word travel, once again, never appears in the Constitution. You've got that right. Whether that would be implicated by and affected by a ban of a resident in one state leaving for another state to obtain reproductive services. Initiatives to define life at the time of conception. Attacking legislation, those states that might codify reproductive rights in Roe versus Casey. That is a possibility down the road. And of course, as we indicated a couple of times already, arguably some pursuits of the other challenges to privacy right premised established rights in very different areas involving family and medical issues and marriage, sex, contraception. So it's fair to say, I think, that regardless of what happens in a few weeks here, that the implications of Dobbs, however it's written, whatever its scope, its breadth, like the decision in Bruin that we talked about before, but especially in Dobbs, because it implicates so many other cases and so many other situations out there, that it will have tendrils. It will have an impact upon other areas of the law. And the notion that somehow this will now be put to bed and we will not be discussing privacy rights and reproductive rights following the decision in Dobbs is probably an unrealistic one completely. Before we begin to wrap up the day, we've got a couple of callers on the line, which I appreciate tremendously. We've got Ross from Middleton. Ross, thanks for calling in today. Your question or comment.
Yeah, hi, Jim. You know, I'm an older guy, so I appreciate the way you've laid this out. I mean, it's some legal stuff that I can't quite wrap my head around. I think the gist I kind of get is that this issue is not going to go away. It's going to get even more complicated, which may sort of force us as a nation to sort of say once and for all, okay, let's just do this nationally versus leaving it to the states, because I think all this interstate sort of stuff is going to get crazy. But the one thing it sounded like you said, like, was with Mississippi, that they, after 4 weeks or after 6 weeks, I think you said, that is when it starts to get difficult for a woman down there to make the decision.
Sure, and, just to be very clear, I appreciate that. Just to, it's 15 weeks is the Mississippi law, 6 weeks is the Texas law. Those are the two, right?
So, okay, Texas. Right. So, and I'm kind of thinking like, I mean, I don't know for sure because I'm not a woman, but is that sometimes they don't find out until they have that missed period, and that could be 4 weeks, and by the time they sort of get to a doctor's office, you're at the six-week number, and it's probably too late. And that's assuming that they're able to pay attention and sort of say, like, okay, I missed my period this month. So, I mean, that 6 weeks seems, that sounds like, oh, they've got 6 weeks to make a decision, but I'm kind of like, they might not even know until later. But right. That was kind of my main comment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate the comment entirely, and there are an awful lot of people out there consistent with what you just said, Ross, who would say that that's the problem with this, is knowledge of whether or not a woman is pregnant and the challenge of making decisions without information, right? Quite literally your own personal medical information, the status of your own body. And that's where those arguments about the right to choose, the right to make those selections, consistent with privacy rights are all important. And again, appreciate very much that observation, Ross. Appreciate your calling in and look forward to future calls as well. We also have Jack from Merrimack calling in. Jack, appreciate your hanging on the line for a while. Jack, your thoughts, comments, questions this morning.
Well, first, I'd agree that, as you said, the Supreme Court has overturned a number of previous decisions, but virtually every one of those overturned decisions have increased, not decreased, human rights. And the reversal of Roe would do that, would decrease human rights. But two more things bother me. First, you've called the six justices conservative. I disagree with that description. They're all now, or they have previously been, Federalist Society members. And if they follow through that philosophy of the Federalist Society, they're not conservatives in the normal sense. Their judicial philosophy is reactionary.
Right.
And finally, I'd argue that Amy Coney Barrett has no business on the bench at all. She made a statement that, and I'm paraphrasing here, a legal career has one purpose, and that's building the kingdom of God. And that's fine if you're a lawyer, but using that philosophy as a judge or justice is a pretty clear violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. I'm not a lawyer, but that's my opinion.
And Jack,
regardless of how she construes, any decision, and regardless of how she construes, any decision that she makes in this case, seems obvious that that's what she's doing. She's using that philosophy.
Right. And Jack,
those are my comments.
Three very good comments. Appreciate that tremendously. And observations that advance the discussion. Again, regardless of what side of these issues, these very troubling and challenging issues you might be on, I'll comment on just a couple of them. I appreciate very much. Language is important, as we always say. Words have meanings. The appellation of conservative versus liberal justices is probably somewhat misleading. You're absolutely right. I appreciate the insight and the perspective on that as well, since we often know that in many, many cases, the conservative, so-called conservative justices will ally with the so-called liberal justices. And so labeling people in one way or another it can be problematic. I agree with you entirely. I think as we think about where the votes will come down, both in Bruin and in the Dobbs case, maybe we adopted that as sort of a shorthand version, maybe too shorthand in describing where people are. Certainly, Chief Justice Roberts is perhaps the best example, Jack, of what you just said, which is he is obviously appointed by a president who is generally regarded as a conservative president, but the appellation is not always indicative of how justices will decide. So very well taken point. As to others, and we had a caller early on in the first, at the end of the first hour, who I think underscored in many ways your other point, which is that the administration of law, the delivery of the rule of law in America, should be apolitical, right? That's our aspiration, right? Once you can be an advocate as a lawyer. And yes, Jack, you don't have to be a lawyer to articulate the very good and thoughtful things that you and others have said this morning. Don't have to be a lawyer at all to understand how all this works. But when it comes to the advancement, the promotion of the rule of law, Those things should be apolitical, right? They should be nonpartisan. I've commented routinely about the fact that in my own history of law enforcement, you don't sit around and talk about whether or not this particular prosecution or this particular kind of a sentencing recommendation or even issues on appeal, whether that's consistent with a political agenda or a platform, that sort of thing. It has to do with apolitical things. And I would offer that I think what you're saying is that when it comes to justices, they too should not have biases that would indicate that is not their case. More generally, I think you hit it right on the head that the overall arc, as many folks have said, of human rights, of civil rights in America, has been toward expansion. Even our limited discussion, frankly, our very cursory discussion this morning of civil rights. We'll chat at some point down the road about voting rights, about housing rights, and those kinds of things. Even in the wake of legislative enactments, the rule has always been, the movement has always been toward expansion, making things better for Americans, embracing more and more people of all immutable characteristics, and ensuring that promise we talked about at the start of the hours here to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty, that all of those things are accessible, promotable for every single American, regardless of politics, regardless of who you are and how you live your life. Say, this has been wonderful once again. Join me again, along with Connor, here in the studio next Saturday at 9 o'clock. Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel will always take your phone calls. Appreciate the thoughtful comments and observations made. This is WAUK.